When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, it is Trags once again. Mike Petralia back with another installment of Red Sox Beat on the CLNS Media Network. It is my sincere pleasure to welcome back the one and only Ian Brown covering the Red Sox for MLB.com. Ian, I'm glad to see your smiling face and that backdrop, whether or not it's real or computer generated, I don't care. It's a good sign that you're down in Fort Myers.
Yeah, I'm not at the ballpark right now, but I have been there for the last several days. So that's a big step from where we were last year at this time when, you know, we wondered when baseball was going to start.
Let's get to the news of the day, Ian. Unfortunately, Chris Sale was not able to talk to the Red Sox during the lockout, which ended, of course, last Friday. And because of that, he was not able to officially inform him. I found this interesting in your story on MLB.com. Wasn't able to officially inform him, inform the team that he had a stress fracture in his right rib cage until, the CBA was ratified and he could officially talk to the team. And that news, of course, broke on Tuesday when Chaim Bloom met with you guys in the media.
Yeah, so the lockout ended, it was March 10th. Thursday night, basically 6 p.m., the owners ratified the CBA. And then I think it was right around then when teams were told, all right, you can get in touch with all your players now. So it was just a free-for-all. And then so Cora and Chaim Bloom called Chris Sale. And Chris Sale felt really bad because he's like, you know, I had to tell them about this injury. It's probably the last thing they wanted to hear.
Right.
It's not a good thing. You know, I don't see him pitching for the Red Sox before May 1st. I think May is the best possible scenario. This happened about a month ago. It'll be 4 weeks on Thursday. And, you know, Chris Sale said himself, like, broken bones take 6 to 8 weeks to heal. That's a universal thing. And we all know that, you know, rib injuries can be tricky. So you figure best case scenario is that Sale starts throwing in 2 to 3 weeks, maybe opening day or a little before, and then he gets back at some point in May. But not a good way for the season to start for the Sox.
Chaim Bloom said on Tuesday or Wednesday, I forgot what day it is. That's what March Madness will do to you, by the way. He said said this week that we're talking weeks, not days, before Sale even gets a ball in his hand, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's going to be a minimum of 2 weeks before that bone is all the way healed. So I'm sure what's going to happen, Trey, is in 2 weeks, they're going to do another MRI, another CT scan, x-rays, whatever, to see, you know, how the image looks now compared to when it first happened. So that'll be the first step for the bone not to be broken anymore. And then he can start playing catch, and you know, the buildup from there. He can start playing catch from there, but it's going to take a while to build back up because, you know, the old saying, as long as you're down, it takes that many days to build back up. So it's going to be a while. This isn't going to be like he's going to miss one start thing.
And the other thing, not to interrupt you, Ian, but that's my prerogative. It's my podcast. the issue with Chris Sale is he's not drop and drive. As Chaim Bloom also pointed out, he is a rotational pitcher. And what that means is he slings the ball. You know, he's got a very, everybody knows, he's got a very thin frame, but he generates an incredible amount of torque by rotating his upper torso. And that is going to put even that much more strain on his rib cage. And it has to, another reason why it has to be full strength when he comes back. Do you, or does anybody in the organization, you think, have an issue with him throwing live BP at Florida Gulf Coast University?
No, I mean, they can't because look, you know, these guys weren't allowed to be in contact with anyone. So, you know, a lot of pitchers all around baseball were throwing live BP, trying to, you know, if anything, they would probably be happy that he was trying to do everything he could be and not just sitting around during
the
lockout.
Ground running.
Oh, there's a lockout. We don't know when it's going to start. The Red Sox guys, it was a whole camp of guys with Sale. It was Pivetta. It was Matt Barnes. Some of the minor league guys. So they had a raft of guys over there. And Chris Sale called this just a freak injury. So the shape of it for him was that he said he spent his whole winter and spring rebuilding arm strength, because that was something he lost in the time he missed due to the Tommy John surgery. So he was really excited about the way he felt this spring and the way the ball was popping. And, you know, I think he's still going to have a good year. It's just not going to be a full year. But yeah, he was, that was what he was pretty bummed about, just after the foundation that he's built for the season.
Well, once again, we have the one and only Nate Eovaldi thrown into the spotlight of the Red Sox, if you will, of their rotation. He has always responded. He's been one of the more unheralded stars of the Red Sox in the last 20 years that I can remember. Unheralded because when you think of guys that can become dominant or become key figures in the rotation, you don't always think Nathan Eovaldi. And, you know, this is just another example. He was tabbed the opening day starter by Alex Cora on Wednesday. So talk a little bit, Ian, if you would, about Nate Eovaldi getting the call to be the opening day starter.
Yeah, just first of all, I really think that Nathan Eovaldi was going to start opening day, even if Sale was healthy, because I think this was going to be a reward that Eovaldi anchored the staff last year. He didn't miss a start. He was their best guy in the playoffs again, second playoff run in a row that he was their best guy. So I do believe that he was pitching opening day no matter what. But he really has been a steady horse for them. And this guy is just a workout maniac. I mean, nobody works harder in the weight room or in his craft. He just goes about it very quiet. He doesn't seek attention. And, I think Dave Dombrowski took some heat for that contract. The first year when Eovaldi had an injury early and then they moved to the bullpen and back to the rotation, he really had a tough year, but that was really the price they paid for how they pushed him in 2018. And nobody wants that World Series ring that they wouldn't have won without him. But yeah, the COVID year, he was very good. Last year, he was even better. And now they think there's no reason to think that this year, if he stays healthy again, you know, he won't again be kind of the anchor to the starting rotation, probably lead them in innings this year.
That's where I think it hurts. Sale's injury really hurts, because if you put Sale and Eovaldi at the top of the rotation, that 1-2 dynamic is much different than having Nathan Eovaldi. And, you know, all due respect to Nick Pivetta, and maybe Nick Pivetta takes a big step up this year. What about Nick Pivetta?
Yeah, no, I have a good feeling about Nick Pivetta. This guy, this guy's a bulldog, man. I think he showed the world got to see a little bit of him in the playoffs last year. We remember that 13 inning game against the Rays where he came out of the bullpen and threw four just shutdown innings and was just all fired up. He's an emotional guy, and game four of the ALCS, he shut the Astros down, Mike. I mean, I think it was 2-1 when he left the game after six innings and some ridiculously low amount of pitches. That I love Alex Cora's, but to this day, I think he should have let him ride, because that was the day that Garrett Whitlock gave up the game tying homer to Jose Altuve that changed that entire series. The Red Sox never recovered from that. But Pivetta, really, I think he gained something from what he did in the playoffs last year. I think he's going to take another step forward this year, but not a lot of people talk about how much they're going to miss Eduardo Rodriguez. I think that's a sizable loss for this team, especially now with Sale. I know E-Rod could drive you crazy with his inconsistency at times, but this guy did a lot for this team.
He gave you innings.
They are going to miss him. So now, Trags, you're counting on Michael Wacha. You're counting on Rich Hill, who we're all familiar with, but you know he's 41.
41, 42, right?
Yeah, 41, 42, you know, somewhere around there. And, you're going to count more on these young guys. Tanner Houck, I think, is going to be in the rotation to start the season now. I think he will be the fifth guy now with Sale out. And Garrett Whitlock, who was such a huge part in the bullpen last year. Garrett is going to be, you don't know what role. Is he going to be closer? He's going to be stretched out this spring. So maybe he starts also if Hill or somebody like that has to start.
Could
slow.
He be an opener?
He could be an opener, yeah. Or more like the bulk inning guy in the middle of the game, because the opener usually only goes one or two innings. But Yeah, I mean, Whitlock and Hauk are, again, going to be huge parts of this pitching staff. And the Red Sox do feel better about their overall depth of their pitching right now than they did last year. And that's why they went out and got Walker and they got Hill. And they expect that both Whitlock and Hauk will take another step forward as young guys who were really thrown into the fire last year. So, you know, they think that maybe they can withstand the loss of Chris Hill for a month. And, you know, I know the starting pitching market is kind of dried up right now.
Right.
But maybe Bloom finds somebody on the trade market or he finds somebody he can sign that can be like a little bit of a placeholder also.
All right. Let's talk about Jake Diekman and Matt Strom. They added a couple of relievers this week, and obviously that bolsters a lefty heavy bullpen. What can you tell us about those two guys?
Yeah, what the Red Sox really, you know, this with this three batter minimum thing, Trag, the loogie, as they call them.
Yes.
they've really become outdated. I mean, you're not going to see Tony Fossas anymore. In more current times from our day covering the Sox, Mike Myers, you're not going to see guys like that just aren't useful anymore. As long as the team has pinch hitters that they can hit for those lefties on the bench, those guys are going to be useless. So what the Red Sox tried to do was go out and get lefties who have pretty identical splits against lefties and righties in their career. So they think that Diekman and the other guy, Strom, who's lesser known, mainly because he's had a knee injury that's really kept him from doing anything much the last 2 years, but they really like him. Strom's more of a middle guy, like a swingman type of guy who can, like you said, maybe an opener, a guy who can give you two or three innings, where Diekman's a traditional kind of one inning guy, even got a little taste of closing last year. So, you know, they think those two signings give them a little depth. It does seem like the balance of the bullpen is a little off kilter right now, because you have Diekman, you have Strom, you have Josh Taylor, who was excellent, one of the best left on left guys yes. in the major leagues last year. And you still have Austin Davis and you still have Darwinson Hernandez. So you got to think they're going to trade, you know, one or two of those guys. They're not going to carry five lefties in their bullpen.
No. I mean, you know,
start the season. I mean, they obviously like these guys. So I think maybe, I think Darwinson Hernandez is a guy who was a big name when he first came up, but just has never lived up to it. So I think that's a guy you could see him moved before the season starts.
Speaking with Ian Brown of MLB.com, doing a wonderful job of covering your hometown Red Sox for MLB and RedSox.com. You can follow him on Twitter, Ian M. Brown, with the E at the end, all one word. I get it right? I did, right?
You did, always try.
Good. Okay, maybe the Red Sox are catching a little heat, Ian, for the fact that they seem to be a little bit slow on the uptake post reactivation after the lockout, whereas you see teams like obviously the Blue Jays acquiring Aroldis Chapman. You see Chris Bryant going to the Colorado Rockies. You see Kyle Schwarber, a big piece, obviously coming down the stretch and in the playoffs postseason last year for the Red Sox. Schwarber signs a multi-year deal with the Phillies. What gives, and when can the Red Sox engine, when do you expect that Red Sox transactional engine to get started up?
Yeah, both Alex Cora and Chaim Bloom hinted patience with this. So I get the sense they're up to something, but they're just playing the waiting game. They will have somebody. They will have a bat by opening day, a right-handed bat, I imagine. You know who's another name that you should keep an eye on? Is Jose Ramirez. Because the Indians, as you know, they're situation where they're offloading guys. They're trading guys.
Totally.
So the Red Sox do have a deeper farm system now where they could maybe package some people that would make him attractive, but that I know that's a bat that they would like a lot. So they will get somebody, but I know it's hard for fans to watch, you know, the rapid fire action going around a lot, you know, across the game right now and not seeing their team you know, do much of anything. But Chaim Bloom is going to stay true to his principles. He's not going to overpay Trags. He could have bought Kyle Schwarber back, but he didn't think that he's a player who is worth 4 years and $80 million, because you have to remember too, you know, maybe the prospect in their farm system who's the closest to the major leagues is, you know, a first baseman in Tristan Casas. And you should see this guy, man. He's just 250 pounds. He's just huge. He's built like a tank, you know.
One of the first tweets I saw of yours, Ian, not to cut you off again, but it was of Tristan Casas at minor league camp when you were down there covering minor league camp while the lockout was still going on, and you were just raving about Casas.
Yeah, he's huge, and he's got like a JD Martinez type of work ethic. He's just like very obsessive about hitting and very obsessive about his workout routine. And he's just one of those guys. He carries himself not like a scared kid, but just somebody who like knows that he belongs. So I just think that he's going to tear Fenway Park up when you get the chance. So with that in mind, it just didn't make sense for them to bring Schwarber back at that kind of money.
You know, there's another Ohio team that's been offloading quite a bit of talent, and their first baseman is in the last 2 years of a $25 million a year deal. You think the Red Sox would be at all interested in Joey Votto?
Well, you know who would be the most excited person if they did that besides you? Would be Tristan Casas, who has modeled his entire hitting approach
there
around
you
Joey
go.
Votto. Yeah, I mean, he loves Joey Votto, so for him to be able to be around him, I mean, I don't really see it now because they trade JD Martinez, because right now they have a little bit of a logjam. They have, you know, JD back as the DH for one more year. They do have, they have Dahlbeck at first base. But yeah, I mean, you could slot Votto in for a year or two, sure. So, you know, I wouldn't rule it out entirely. It's just a matter of what the,
It would make sense. I mean, it's another, the problem is it's another left-handed bat.
Yeah, and they want a right-handed bat for sure. But, you know, they did lose Schwarber's left-handed bat. They keep saying they need a right-handed bat because they traded Hunter Renfro, who did an excellent job for them last year. And they got Jackie in return. But, yeah, I mean, if you're a great hitter, who cares if you're a righty or lefty? I mean, a great hitter is a great hitter. And Votto had a pretty good year last year.
He did. Very good bounce-back year.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's and I think he has the kind of stroke that would play in Fenway, too. He can go opposite field, so you know that's something that is a good name, and that is something to keep an eye on.
Speaking with Ian Brown, covering the Red Sox for MLB.com. Basketball, as we all know, is in full steam for both pro and college hoops, with the big tournament getting underway this week. And MLB, as you've been listening here on the Red Sox Beat podcast, will soon be back in business with spring training getting underway later this week and opening day coming up April 7th. From all the latest odds, totals, player performance props to where the next fired coach is going to land, Bet Online is the number one spot for all of your sports betting needs. Head on over to the website or use mobile devices, your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code CLNS50, that's CLNS50, to get started. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline is your source for hockey, boxing, and UFC odds. From sports right down to your favorite Vegas casino games, BetOnline is your number one online wagering destination. BetOnline, the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports and play your favorite games. BetOnline, where the game starts. Back with Ian Brown of RedSox.com. Ian, Xander Bogaerts made it very clear on Tuesday, speaking in the clubhouse, and yes, clubhouses are back open to the media.
Yes.
Woohoo! He made it very clear, speaking to Red Sox media, that he really doesn't want any part of playing second base or third base, for that matter.
I mean, Trax, just look at what number does Xander Bogaerts wear. You know, he's number two. There's a reason for that. It's Derek Jeter. I mean, obviously, this guy patents himself as a shortstop. He's always thought himself as a shortstop. In 2014, when the Red Sox went out and got Steven Drew back, if you remember, he helped them win the World Series. And then I think it was May or June of that season, Drew was still a free agent, and Ben Cherington at the time brought him back. And then they moved Xander from short to third. And Trax, he was in a funk.
Yes, I remember that.
He dropped 20 to 30 points when he got moved off shortstop. They traded Steven Drew at the July 31st deadline that year. Xander Bogaerts went back to shortstop, and by gosh, he started hitting again. I mean, this guy loves to play shortstop. This guy, I know he doesn't have great range, but he, as Alex Cora pointed out yesterday, the one thing you know with him, if the ball gets hit to him, he's gonna make the play. And he does, like, what's underrated most about Xander Bogaerts is this guy's work ethic. I mean, he's 29 years old. I've never seen him come into camp in better shape than he did yesterday. I mean, his biceps are just bulging. I mean, this guy is a workout fiend, and he was working on his agility this offseason also. So one of the underrated, because he's such a laid back, you know, Mr. You know, I grew up on the beaches of Aruba, just has that persona, you know the guy. He is an intense worker. So he's going to do everything he can to keep that shortstop position. But it's really interesting because he has an opt out this offseason. When he signed that 6-year contract 3 years ago, you know, it seemed like he was going to be one of those lifetime Red Sox guys. I mean, he took a discount deal to stay in Boston. But things have changed, Trags. One thing that's changed is the market for shortstops. You look at what Corey Seager signed for. You look at what Francisco Lindor signed for. And you look at what Xander Bogaerts has become since he signed that deal. He's become a much better hitter than he was before he signed the contract. Right. So he seems to get better every year. He's a team leader. He speaks like 6-7 different languages. He's a clubhouse uniter. So, you know, he has every right to kind of test his services when he becomes a free agent. It's just going to be real interesting to see, you know, how last time he basically stayed with the Red Sox at all costs. What is he going to do this time? Is he just going to, is Scott Boras going to better be able to guide him to do what Scott wants, which is going to be to kind of get a huge offer that's going to reset the market or stay in line with the market at least, or is he going to take another hometown discount? So I'm really dying to see what happens with Xander Bogaerts. I love covering the guy. He's a tremendous person. He's a tremendous player. I'd love to see him in the Red Sox uniform for a long time, but business of baseball is going to come in this winter. Chaim Bloom is not a guy who runs his front office with emotion, very much like even in that regard, and that he is all business, what's best for the team, not what's going to tug on your heartstrings or anything. So, I'm just real curious to see how this plays out. And, oh, by the way, this kid, number 4 pick in the draft last year,
Marcelo Mayer,
is a shortstop, and he looks the part. He's probably three years away still, but just another thing to think about when you think about what kind of contract they're going to sign, if they're going to re-sign Xander Bogaerts this winter.
Didn't Xander Bogaerts earlier in the offseason, like right after the playoffs ended, didn't he indicate something along the lines that he may be willing to move off the shortstop position if they were able to acquire a guy like Carlos Correa? Am I misremembering that?
Somebody wrote something, and I don't think he was quoted directly. It was kind of like one of those people close to Bogaerts think that he would, you know, yada, yada. But he wasn't striking that tune at all. Good for him. He's like, I think he takes a lot of pride in what he's done. And he's like, he was kind of like, I felt like I didn't exist with some of the stuff I was reading this winter. And because, like I said, this guy's worked so hard to be who he is, not just as a player, but as a citizen in the Boston community. And he just loves playing for the Red Sox. And like I said, showed a lot of loyalty in that last contract. So I don't blame him for being a little ticked off. And hey, you remember when the Yankees got Alex Rodriguez? Clearly, he was a better shortstop at the time than Derek Jeter, but the Yankees kept Derek Jeter at shortstop. So, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Xander, but I do think he is one of those guys. He wants to play shortstop. It is hugely important to him. And I'll be surprised if, if he gives that up anytime, 29, 30 years old, to him, that's way too early.
Does
35, 36 years old. I mean, I can't remember how old Cal Ripken was when he finally switched back to third in his career, but maybe somewhere around then. But, you know, right now these are prime years for Xander Bogaerts. He's not looking to switch positions anytime soon.
JD Martinez, what's the deal? Any update on the rumor mill and if he's going to make it to the regular season with the Red Sox?
Yeah, I get that sense he is. I mean, he's a crucial part of what they do right now. And he's got a year left on his contract. He could have opted out for a third year in a row and he ended up staying. But this guy, man, he's a pro. You saw him struggle a little bit, Trags, last year, late in the year, but then the playoffs started and he was Mr. Money, man. This guy comes through in big situations. He's a big game player. Look at his playoff numbers in his career. He's a big game player. He likes the market of Boston. He likes the pressure that comes with playing here. I mean, he indicated he'd love to stay in Boston for years to come. Whether that's going to happen, I don't know. But no, I think they're going to ride with JD this year.
All right, we got to get to the most serious question. How much did it hurt to give your wife, Amy, the beautiful Amy Brown, tickets to Kevin Garnett Day on Sunday at TD Bank Garden instead of you sitting in those prime luxury seats watching number 5 go to the rafters?
That hurt a lot, Trek. Not giving it to Amy, but just the fact that I had to miss that game because I got my tickets for that game months ago. As soon as they announced that KG's number is going up there. I mean, I'm, as you know, I'm a big Celtics guy, and KG is probably in my top five favorite Celtics of all time. I mean, this guy, he might have even raised a stature after that show we put on the other day with that retirement speech and all that. I mean, this guy is just, you were around him more than I was, Trax. I mean, he's at a different level personality-wise, intensity-wise, leadership-wise. So it was hard, but it was just the timing, man. The lockout ended. You know, it's just like I was already down in Florida, and I was like, was I going to fly back up north right when everyone else was flying south? It was just a weird feeling. So I missed the game, but I did enjoy watching it. It was streamed on the wonderful NBC Sports Boston. They streamed the whole ceremony live. So I had a blast watching that. But yeah, I was bummed out because I'm lucky enough, Trags, I was at the retirement ceremony for a DJ, the late, great Dennis Johnson. Yes. And his one up there. For my all-time favorite player, Mr. Larry Joe Burr. I was there for his retirement ceremony when his number went up. Kevin McHale, another one of my favorites. Robert Parrish. So I was there for all four of those. And I was just like, man, this is going to be great. KG's going to be the fifth Celtic I've seen his number retired. And yeah, so for me, the timing wasn't great, but big picture was great. The baseball was back. It was just, I wish maybe it had come back one day later or so I could have gone to that game.
Yeah, that's too bad. But as I know very well, you are one of the biggest Celtics fans on planet Earth. And at least you got to see him play and you got to see the other four numbers go up to the rafters. But Kevin Garnett is unlike any athlete I've ever covered. I will say that. His intensity level is out of the stratosphere.
Yeah, I mean, there's just guys that there's never going to be anyone like him. And, you know, like you see, like Jordan, and to a degree, Kobe and LeBron are a little bit like him and the star power, but there's certain guys, and KG's one of them, you're never going to see another player like that. You're never going to see another Bird either, just the style. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying there's nobody, not going to be anybody better, but just the style of play, the personality, the no-nonsense personality. KG, man, just the intensity there, I've never seen it.
The intensity is what makes him one of the 10 greatest defensive players in his prime of all time.
Yeah.
You agree with that?
We all knew how great a player he was when the Celtics got him, but I don't think not watching him play every game, you don't know about a guy's level of intensity. And Mike Gorman's speech the other day for the number retirement, he said that he saw this in the first exhibition game that KG played. The Celtics were in Rome. And he said that he was playing this like it was game 7 of the NBA Finals, and he was yelling at teammates to go here, to go there. And that was, you know, that said something to me about who this guy was. He just never took a practice off, never took a game off, and just can't say enough good things about KG and what he brought to the Celtics.
Well, it's been fun catching up again, Ian. I want you to get, make sure you put sunscreen on, for God's sake.
Yeah.
We need to protect that. Skin of yours so it doesn't get too burned.
I've been putting on the 30 every day. I'm good.
That's good. You know how I sometimes did not put sunscreen on, and Theo Epstein.
Yes, I remember one time in particular.
Yes, out on where the bench used to be. It's been moved since in front of the clubhouse. But Theo Epstein said, and I'll clean it up. What the hell, Mike? What the hell happened to you? And my legs literally were lobster red because from the day before I did not put the sunscreen on when I was down there, you know, going around to the different fields as, you know, outside JetBlue. And it was a mistake I'll never make again. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I will keep the sunscreen going, though. I promise.
That's good. Well, he is Ian Brown. You can follow him on Twitter at Ian M. Brown, all one word, and E at the end of Brown. So make sure you do that, and make sure to follow his tremendous coverage, as always, on MLB.com and RedSox.com. Want to thank everybody for downloading today's podcast. Thank our great guest, Ian Brown from RedSox.com. Also want to thank our great sponsor, BetOnline.ag. For Ian Brown, I'm Mike Petralia, and this has been the Red Sox Beat Podcast, powered by CLNS Media.